Welcome back to Documentary First, an inside look at a documentary filmmaker's journey. I'm Jason Rugg, filling in for Joshua Q. Lindsay. I think his middle initial's Q. I'm pretty sure it's Q, isn't it? Okay, cool. And joining us is our first-time filmmaker, Christian Taylor.
Hey, how are you?
Good. No, you're not a first-time filmmaker anymore. You're a documentary filmmaker. I still have the old version written on my sheet.
You know, the thing is, I am still going through a first-time filmmaker's experiences, so I do think that it still fits.
Well, good. I didn't totally mess up. Okay, so we didn't actually do a normal episode last week.
No, we didn't.
And I actually haven't had a chance to, I don't even know if that's out yet. Did you record anything? What went out last week?
Yeah, so last week I was in Reims, France, otherwise known to the rest of the world as Reims. But it was interesting. They all do call it Reims. And so I think the rest of the world probably should call its town by the right name. So I'm trying. So I was in Reims and I was with Danny. What?
If they wanted it pronounced like that, they shouldn't have spelled it the way they did.
True. But how in the world do you spell Reims?
No idea. Just like clear throat with some syllables in it. Right. I think that's, yeah.
So anyway, I was with Danny and Flo and Michelle Coupe. We were staying in a lovely little Airbnb right off of the main strip there in Reims. And it was a wonderful, wonderful adventure. I was delighted to have them on the podcast. I hope people have listened to it to get to hear Danny speak and Flo tell, you know, her point of view on things. And it does release today is, well, I guess by the time that people are listening to this, it will be last week. So today, as we are recording, is May 11th. And last week's podcast, while we were in France, releases today. So as you're listening to this, I am currently in New York City after having just done the film festival at the Alliance Française in Manhattan. So just to kind of catch everybody up to speed, I left, I guess Chicago last Thursday, flew to Reims and, met with Flo, Michelle, and Danny. And we toured the town. We saw incredible architecture, a beautiful cathedral, delightful little shops. If you've never been to Reims, you should put it on your bucket list. And then we attended the film festival for the Red Movie Awards. This is a young film festival. It was started by some young French filmmakers who are utterly delightful, super creative. They wanted to make this very special for all the filmmakers. So they rented out a lovely venue called the Salomon Theater. I think that's how you pronounce it. And they basically, from the early morning, they screened a bunch of films. The first film was Climb by Neil Myers, a fantastic documentary, super emotional, about a high sport, highly trained triathlete, but he is the cyclist in the triathlon. And he ended up having a terrible accident. And the film is about his climb back up to recovery. So it's just a phenomenal film. Highly recommend everybody watch it. They were nominated for Best Doc as well as Best Editing and Best Score, just like us. So some stiff competition there. They stayed to watch our film. They felt the same way. It was just, it was nice to have us both in the festival together. He is also a first-time filmmaker. So we had a lot of things like that in common. He's older, like 61. He's even older than I am. So that was cool. We watched those films. And then Denis Vandenbrink and Helen Patton joined us as well for the festival. So we then went out to lunch to a beautiful restaurant there and then got all dolled up for the awards that were that night. And it was, again, in this beautiful venue. Everybody was drenched in champagne, which, if you don't know, Reims is the capital of champagne. And so it was flowing freely that night. And then from there, we just waited to see how we did. We did not win Best Editing. Climb won Best Editing. And we did not win Best Score. I don't know who won that one, but we did win Best Documentary. So that was awesome.
Wow. Congrats. I had to act a little bit surprised, but I already knew because you tweeted about it. So, you know, just a peek behind the curtain.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason, for the softball. You know, it was such a special experience because these were young French people and they were so touched by the story. And then, you know, to give it honor was really meaningful because I really made it as a love letter to the French people to thank them for everything that they've taught me. But I had been told that a lot of younger French people didn't really know the story of Normandy much more than the Americans did. And so I was very thankful that they responded to it like they did. The biggest joy that I had was giving that experience to Danny and Flo, to Michelle Coupe, to Denis Vandenbrink and Helen Patton, who had not been with me at a film festival before and hadn't experienced a victory like that. Danny carried around my trophy like a baby for the rest of the evening. In fact, I almost didn't get it home. So I think I'm going to have to buy her own trophy with her own name on it. So it was very special. They were completely touched and I loved giving them that experience.
Well, awesome.
Yeah. And I was super proud of the festival people because it was the first in-person festival that they had done. And they really went all out. They got bags with, you know, there was not really much in there other than like a button and a map, but they had little red film award bags and they, you know, the screening was free, which I thought was a great idea. And then they charged for the event the night before. They made it super special because they had everybody dress up and, you know, like fancy clothes and they had people there to take pictures. They did spend a good bit of money on the actual awards. They look like little red Oscar men holding a movie camera. So that was cool. They made it a very special night for everybody. And for a young film festival, I was very impressed with that, particularly in French. They got no support from the government or from, you know, people donating money. So I think they did it all with their own money that they pulled together, as well as people that, you know, paid entrance fees for the festival. So it was a great experience. And then Denis Vandenbrink happens to be a press agent for several sailors that sail around the world. And so he asked me afterwards if he could write a press release and send it out to all of his press contacts, which he did. Oh, wow. It was picked up by a few French newspapers. So that was exciting. More people got to hear about it. And So that's just been really great. A lot more people have been hearing about the film, particularly in France. And that made me super happy.
That's incredible. You talking about the film festival, I think one thing we haven't really talked about is that, like, with a film festival, it can be like 12 people or it can be like 1500, depending on, you know, the yeah. film festival. So where did this one fall? Like, how many people would you say that you saw at this film festival?
Well, so this festival was very small. So they have been doing, I think, online stuff up to this point, and they're really trying to grow it in this area of France. Reims is a very artistic community, and you could tell that people were supporting it. They got the mayor there and gave the mayor an award because oh, wow. he's really been behind the festival. And that's why they made it free, was because people had never heard of this film festival before. And so they just opened it to the public. Now, I was only there from when it opened at 9 a.m. until our Q&A was done at 12:30. And I would say there were probably 45 people, 50 people that were there for the actual screening. There were a lot more films after mine. And then for the awards ceremony, I would say there was at least 150 people there. So this was a very small one in terms of size. But it doesn't really matter if people are engaged and you know, very active. The Q&A was one of the best I've had. They asked great questions. It was so, I have found the smaller film festivals are super rewarding. The networking is better. You know, the interaction with the festival directors are better. I learned there that they are all filmmakers, and it's possible they may be able to help us on our shoot with the Carentan project, you know.
Oh, wow.
So it was like I was talking to my people and I was like, hey, do you guys know any rental houses here? Do you, you know, we're looking for a sound guy. Do you know anybody that does sound mixing on location? And so that was kind of cool to be networking like that in a different country. So
yeah, that's awesome. I really cannot, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Networking at film festivals is awesome. I've only been to a couple, and one was like, you know, my school when I was in college hosted a film festival, and it was like, you know, just some people from the community who just love films came out and watched what students, you know, undergrads had made. And then the Geneva Film Festival right here in Geneva, Illinois, which it sounds a lot cooler because you're like, oh, the Geneva Film Festival, it's in Geneva. No, it's like, it's like this little place downtown. Have you ever been to the Geneva Film Festival?
No.
Version?
No.
Okay, so I'm not even sure if they're still doing it, but it was this tiny little festival that, you know, just some people who loved film in the Geneva community started. And like, I got to meet, you know, a director who'd made, you know, $1 million indie film, you know, that sort of thing. And this was pre-pandemic, you know, I was either right out of college. And it's like, you just get to know people who are like, you know, yeah, I grew up here and now I live in LA, but you know, I'm doing this. And it's, you know, if you can find like the little film festivals where the filmmakers are going, you can just, you know, there were maybe 50 people total at the Geneva Film Festival. And so you can just meet, if you're not actually a director yet, you just want to get to know people, you want to start working, go to film festivals and meet the indie people in your
absolutely
area.
I mean, you know, Sundance is great to go to see celebrities or to, you know, see films that are coming out, but, and you do have networking there, you do, but it is a lot more hit or miss, and so that's why I really have enjoyed these smaller festivals.
And one thing about those bigger ones is that people are more on guard against, oh, you're just trying to get to me to get to my network.
Yeah.
Like that's something that people are more aware of. Like there's a great conference. If you want to get into entertainment on the business side, like, you know, authoring documents, that sort of thing, there's this great conference. You have to be in college to attend it. It's called Future Now. I'm actually really good friends with the founder and help her with everything she's doing out there whenever I can. And it's just like, you get to meet people at these smaller conferences who are like, I'm here to help people. I'm here to get to know people. I'm here to, you know, that's what networking really is like getting to know the people on your level and maybe a little bit above, but you know, you can't just go like, oh, I just, Mr. Spielberg, you know, you have to find the people who are like on your level or right there. And so that's really cool. It's, I love hearing that happens even on the other side of the world.
Yeah, you know, it does. Same culture. One thing that I have learned in all of my years of networking is when I first started out, there were a lot of actors that I was networking with, and really their mindset was only, I want a job. I want a job. I want to meet a producer. I want to meet a director. I want to give them my resume. I want to give them my headshot. And I watched this, and I also was able to see, I knew directors, I knew producers. And so I was able to see their reactions on the other side. And they were always so uncomfortable with actors doing that because they would just go home and throw their resume or throw their headshots in the trash because they didn't have a project that they were even working on at the moment. And, you know, the actors come across as very needy and desperate. I've also seen that with other, you know, production people that are trying to network with other production companies. So, you know, one thing that I've learned is that networking should really be about caring about the other person genuinely and being interested in what they are doing genuinely and trying to build a relationship on mutual interest or mutual help and not just what those people can do for you.
Yeah, I am. So Sean, my writing partner, he and I very early on, before we were even really writing partners, we discussed, you know, what do you do when you get the chance to approach somebody? And it was like, I wouldn't approach somebody higher than me unless I have something to offer them. Not just, hey, can you give me a job? It's not a, you know, it's, can I give you something? And so like one of the most fruitful relationships that I've had since 2017, that is a project that I still can't even really talk about. But it's because we went to a producer and said, hey, we know how to do this thing. Do you have any way to use this? And he goes, yeah, we have a project we could resurrect and try with that. And so it's like, I've been working on this project for like 5 years for free and just helping them move this thing along, because I know that I want to help somebody make something. It's you can't just approach it from, what can you give me? Yeah. It has to be, what can I give you?
Super, super, super important. That's a great tip, Jason. Very industrious of you.
That's also how I approach internships. Yeah. Like if you're going to intern with somebody, don't just be, I'm here to learn from you. It's I'm here to learn from you, but also do anything that you need me to do. That is what,
yeah.
Like I want to learn and be of value to you so that maybe they'll hire you.
Yeah, that's absolutely the right way to look about things, particularly when you're starting out. It's awesome.
Well, this became a little sidetrack into networking and how to do it well. That wasn't really on the plan, but we do actually have an interesting update on someone in your network, right? You've been networking with a new distributor.
Yeah.
These were people who you met and you didn't ask anything from right away, right?
When I met them, they asked for the movie. You know, they're like, hey, we've seen your movie. Can we distribute it? And it was taking up time. And so I said, well, how about this other thing I'm doing? So that's kind of how that started. And we've had Joe Amadei on the film. He's from Virgil Films. He's just an incredible guy. I'm so thankful for him. We've shared about this 2 weeks ago. He has sent us an offer for distribution. I only started reviewing it on the way home from Russ, and I've only gotten halfway through the contract. But so far, it is a little bit more top shelf than the previous contract that we had. So I will, I definitely need to look at it. But we're going to sign it. We're going to sign it. They're just such awesome people to work with. And we will need to probably make a few tweaks that we're going to talk about, but we have already signed a contract and paid him to be a sales agent to take our film to the Cannes film market. It's not going to screen there, but they are going to present it to European distributors, European buyers. So that's going to, he leaves on May 17th for the Cannes film market, and he will be there, I guess, probably for a week or so. So we're really hoping for good things where that's concerned. And then, hopefully by the time he gets back, we'll be able to sign this agreement and move forward with, distribution.
Well, awesome. So how long, in comparison to the other distribution contract, which I've seen and is incredibly long, is this similar? Is it longer? Is it shorter?
There's a lot of things that are similar. There's a lot of things that are similar, except this is much more well-written, much more concise, more simple to understand, but it does still have the main contract and then like the schedule of all the explanations of terms, all of those things stayed the same. And there are a few things that are different. One thing I'm going to ask him about is there was a confidentiality clause in there. So basically I can't talk about the distribution deal. And I'm going to ask him maybe if he would be willing to waive that just so that we can talk about that, or at least ask him why that is in there. Why do distributors put that confidentiality clause in there?
So does it specify that you can't talk about the agreement as a whole or specific pieces, like specific terms in the agreement? What's the language?
Terms in the agreement. That's why I'm being so vague.
Okay.
Just because I haven't even signed the contract yet, but I want to honor what he's asking until at least I ask him to waive it. So
I just want to make sure we weren't violating it by talking about it right now.
No. I'm being that purposely vague. So we'll just kind of see. In the meantime, Mindy Cook, who's been on the show before, sent me a podcast to listen to about some movers and shakers in the industry talking about the changing face of distribution. And she said, I just want to tell you, Christian, I've listened to this And everything that they're saying on here is exactly the experience that you've been having. It's an industry-wide thing that they're saying, and they are making some propositions for some new ways to go about things. So I'm going to listen to that. I'll be interesting to report on that, when I get through it. And there's another conference that I just saw online that came out about the same thing and what exactly is happening right now. So this is a huge hot topic of conversation about, you know, distribution for independent films and how it's never, ever been this hard for an independent filmmaker to get their film distributed. So I'm looking forward to listening to those.
Can you send me that podcast?
Yes, I'll be good. I'll send you that podcast. And you know what? Maybe we'll link that. We'll link that in our show notes so that other people can watch that as well or listen to it. She did say, you don't need to watch it. You can put it on the background, do some chores. She realized halfway through, I don't need to sit here and watch this. So we'll link that in the show notes. And then in the meantime, you know, we've been trying to get the word out about the film being on our website for streaming and for DVD buying, and we have made some sales. So I think we've made $87 in sales on Gumroad from rentals or purchases. So it's nothing to shake a stick at. Gumroad takes 9%, and then they send us the rest at the end of the week, I guess. And then we have sold a few DVDs as well. So that feels good that at least it's kind of going back into our pockets, and we'll have to see. I don't think that Joe will be able to distribute our film until like August or September. So we'll probably keep it here for a few more months, and we'll go from there.
And the Gumroad is just, it's currently a rental, right? Like you don't own it.
You can buy it, but you do have to have a Gumroad subscription. So it's kind of like Netflix in that, or not Netflix, like Amazon. So,
Okay. So like you have a Gumroad account and then you buy it and it's in your Gumroad account.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, cool.
That's how that works.
Let's see. Did you want to talk about, I think you said you're going to something with Airbus.
Yeah. Let me talk about that a little bit. I am running around with the chicken with my head cut off today because at 5 a.m. I leave in the morning to go to Washington, D.C. to do an event tomorrow afternoon, which will be May 12th with Airbus. Michelin and Delta are also participating. It's going to be at the Air and Space Museum out in Chantilly, Virginia at the Udvar-Hazy location. It is predominantly a private screening for all of these companies and their employees. But it'll be good networking. I'll be interested to see what comes from that. Hopefully it opens other doors for other companies to want to show the film, places. So, and then I'm going to spend the weekend with David Chapman and his family in Washington, D.C., trying to prepare for the next event, which is Monday, May 16th. Or is that Tuesday? I don't have my calendar in front of me, but I think it's Tuesday.
Remind people who David Chapman is.
Yeah, David Chapman is in our movie. He's one of our cast members. He was Colonel David Chapman, who was the senior military attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Paris. And he's been a huge part of our film community. And when he got out of the military and out of the embassy's office, he joined Michelin as he's in charge of all of the military sales for Michelin. So, and he's just been a champion of the film. He kind of goes around and is in the Q&As with me. And so that's been pretty great. I was telling somebody today, they're going to ask us at all these events they always do, how David Chapman and I met. So I'm going to tell that story real quick since we're talking about David Chapman. In 2017, my son Josh was asked to sophomore homecoming by a girl named Alex. And their parents invited us over beforehand to take pictures. And I had just returned back from a pre-production trip in France on The Girl Who Wore Freedom. And I was explaining to the parents that I had just gotten back and, was telling them that I was looking at making a movie over there. And the dad says, maybe my best friend might be helpful to you. And I was like, really? Why? He's like, well, he's a senior military attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Paris. I was like, yeah, he probably would be very helpful.
No, we already have one of those.
And, as it turns out, his office was the exact office that was in charge of the D-Day ceremonies in Normandy.
Wow.
So I sent him the trailer and he tells the story that after he saw it, he was just all in. He said people asked him to support stuff all the time and the answer is usually always no. But when he saw that trailer, it was a different story. And that's been the case. He greased the skids for us in Normandy in so many different ways with the military. He then, jumped on D-Day and we were able to film him and, you know, he interviewed one of our veterans, so he's in the film, but we've also interviewed him in his official capacity as this military official. And yeah, so he's just been a champion. He's been right there with me all along. In his job interview, Jason, he told the people, you know, you're a French-American company. You really should watch this film. This is before he even had a job there. And then he finally got hired. And the woman came back to him that interviewed him and said, you know, I was really interested in that film that you were talking about in your interview. Can we watch it? Maybe it would be something we'd want to share at Michelin. And of course, that's exactly what happened. And they ended up bringing us to Michelin to do a special screening for their veterans group. And then we did a whole screening on March 13th, 2020, the day before the world shut down. That was our last screening before the pandemic. And all of that was because my son went to homecoming with Alex. Isn't that a great story?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. That just, it's all tied together.
It's the story of this film. I mean, I just can't say enough. I think the power of prayer has taken us further than just about anything else. So David Chapman will be there. I'll be staying with he and his family over the weekend. And then Monday we fly to New York City and I meet Virginie Durr and a whole bunch of the Delta people and Danny and Flo. Air France is flying them over to New York. So by the time that you are listening to this, Danny and Flo are already in New York and they have asked me to take you to Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island and Central Park. So as you're listening to this next Wednesday, that's probably what we're doing. But before that, on Monday, we have this big screening at the French Institute, and it'll be all sorts of people from Michelin to Delta to Best Defense Foundation to French, American Francophones. And we hope to touch a lot of lives there. And as soon as all of that New York business is over with, we come back to Chicago for a week to regroup before we head to Georgia. And we're going to be screening at the National Infantry Museum at Fort Benning on May 25th. Super excited about that. And to take Danny and Flo to a real Army base in the United States. And then we are going to be doing a veteran dinner with 30 World War II veterans on the 31st, who on the 1st, we are then taking them over to Normandy. And that will start that whole extravaganza. So that's what's coming up.
Well, awesome. Is there anything else you want to touch on, or do we just go straight to DocuView, Deja Vu, whatever it's called now?
The docs we watched.
Yeah, I don't know. That thing.
I think the only other thing I'd say is we are thick in the production of, this Carentan project, and we're shooting 4 days in France. And, it has gotten very complicated as we're trying to make sure that we get all of these people over to France, that we get them all housed, that we have the right equipment, that we, whether we rent it or we take it. It just is not easy to do a 2-continent documentary film. And this I know now firsthand and secondhand. So that's where our company has been focused on. Hopefully we will kind of get it all together. We've run into a few snags here or there, but I have confidence it's all going to work out and we'll have some more exciting stuff to report when we get back.
Well, awesome. All right. Do you want to transition into docs we watched?
Which
do we have a theme song for that? Do we have to leave a spot for?
No, we're going to have to come up with a new theme song for Docs We Watch. This is our new segment, DocuView Deja Vu. DocuView Deja Vu. All right. Now that I can say it right, I don't know why we have to change it, but anyway. All right, why don't you go first?
Okay. So it was an early pandemic gem that this came out. It was an HBO Max documentary called Class Action Park. Have you seen this?
Christian? No, never even heard of it.
Okay. So in the 1980s, there was a place called Action Park in New Jersey, and it literally killed people. It was a theme park where, you go down a water slide and you it loops around and everything, and that's cool. I came out with a bunch of teeth in my arm from the people who previously had hit the wall wrong and left teeth embedded in the wall. Like, it is insane, the stuff. As it goes on, this thing gets more and more and more insane. At first, it's like, okay, yeah, this is a little bit crazy. I can't believe they're doing that. They're not really trusting people's safety, that sort of thing. And it just keeps getting worse and worse. And like, the log flume ride, that people go through this tunnel and like half the time they come out unconscious, and we're not sure if that's because they hit the wall too hard or if it just, the speed's too high, or it's just like, and it's all real. And it's funny and interesting until you get to the sad parts where people actually lost family members to this place. Legitimately people died because of just their flagrant view on safety. It's a really fun documentary besides those sad parts, because of just how insane it is. You will not believe the stuff that they got away with. There was a freeway in the middle. And definitely there was something about people stealing go-karts, getting them out onto the freeway, and the police showing up. I can't even remember all the craziness that happens in it, but totally worth the watch.
Where can people watch this?
It's on HBO Max.
Okay. Wow. Can't wait for that one. That sounds fun. Okay. So I watched one coming home on the plane, actually, that I thought was fascinating and disturbing. And it's called Before the Flood. It actually came out in 2016. So it isn't new news, which is interesting. And this is a film. It's a documentary film by Leonardo DiCaprio. It's a look at how climate change affects our environment. And it talks a lot about what society can do to prevent the demise of so many different things, species, ecosystems, native communities across the planet. And there was a section where they showed clips of a lot of people on Fox News or other government officials sort of making fun of Leonardo DiCaprio, sort of stepping into being a spokesperson for these issues. And what did he know? What could he bring to the table? What kind of expert was this actor? But, he spent so much time going around, flying to different places, actually talking to people about the changes that they've seen, that I have so much respect for his commitment to this. It's interesting how he started it out. I really liked the shape of the movie. He said that he used to go to bed at night and the picture above his crib was this beautiful artistic work. And it started off this beautiful Garden of Eden, and it transitioned to this middle place that wasn't so great. And then there were all these pictures of this dystopian Garden of Eden. So it was really, a vivid picture of what would happen if the people that inherited the Garden of Eden didn't care for it. And you could just see that he was watching this happen as he went around and interviewed all of these things. And he has such a passion for making sure that we care for the earth. And so it was very convicting to me, quite honestly, about changes that we all can make. So I'm sure that a lot of people would think there was a political agenda there. As a Christian, I can't figure out why it's bad for us to care for the environment and try to limit our footprint. I don't know, but it was a very well done film.
About we're made to care for the earth. that's part of what we're supposed to do. Yeah. But nah, yeah.
And maybe I'm sure that natural changes occur over time. They did before we got here, and they always will. But I do still think we have a responsibility to live responsibly. And I look at us, the deforestation and the way that we are buying up all of our farmland and we're turning it into suburbs because people don't want to farm anymore and we can make more money putting, developments on this farmland. But all of our oxygen is being, chopped down with every tree. So, it was a very big overview perspective of what's happening on a big global scale. And he didn't just talked to Americans. He went around and talked to a lot of different people about their perspectives on global warming. So I found it fascinating, really. And I really feel like it's even more urgent now to listen to what he was saying than it was in 2016. So there you go.
Well, cool. It's just weird to think that 2016 is 6 years ago. That's like, wow. I'm like, oh yeah, this didn't come out that long ago. It's like, yeah, oh wow.
It's because we've missed 2 years of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. The pandemic doesn't feel like time. It's all confusing. Well, all right. Do we have anything else we need to touch on before we wrap up?
No, I just want to say thank you to our Patreon subscribers. You guys are our backbone and we really appreciate you. If you haven't been a Patreon subscriber, please join us. We can use every bit of help we can get. And we are starting to put up some really, you know, unique content that I think you will enjoy. So thank you very much. You guys can rent the movie or buy the movie on our website, thegirlywarfreedom.com through Gumroad. Or buy a DVD and send it to your grandparents if they still have a DVD player. So that's it for now.
All right. And be sure to rate the show everywhere that you listen to podcasts. That would be really helpful. Well, all right. Thank you for listening to Documentary First, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and you can be the one to tell it.
Yes, you can. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Documentary First. We really appreciate your partnership with us. We can't do any of this without you. So thank you for listening, donating, and following along on our journey. We are supported by generous donations from people just like you. To make a donation, visit thegirlwhowarefreedom.com or support us on Patreon at patreon.com/documentaryfirst. To learn more about our other works in progress, visit documentaryfirst.com or follow Documentary First on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This podcast was produced by Documentary First, edited and mixed by Jason Hoban, with music by Jeff Kurtenacker.